President Obama met with Republican and Democratic leaders in Congress last night to try to come to some sort of resolution to reopen the federal government. But no progress was made, and apparently there's no end in sight. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, October 3rd. We will get two takes on the shutdown and the showdown, and we will welcome your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. How do you want to see this impasse resolved? Who do you think is to blame here? Who do you think is being reasonable or unreasonable in trying to resolve this dispute? Let me welcome our guests. I should say our first guest, Brian Schimming, Vice Chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party and a partner at Midwest Strategy. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much. So in your mind, how bad is this shutdown?
Well, I don't think it's bad at all. I suppose if it went on for a couple of months, you might see some actual real-life negative effects of it. But the truth of the matter is the president invited the congressional leaders over to the White House yesterday, knowing full well it was not a negotiation. It was a show meeting for him. And I frankly, my view of this is the president could avoid whatever shutdown there is of this today, all these stories that we hear. He could avoid it today by agreeing to negotiate with congressional Republicans, but he doesn't want to do it. He knows that the shutdown is, in his view anyway, is good theater, political theater for him. And so, frankly, I think he wants this shutdown. And part of the reason for that is that he's not doing very well in the polling right now. He's had Syria. He's got a weak economy. He's had issue after issue the last particularly probably 60 to 90 days, his polling is down in the low 40s, and 68% of the people in America think the country is off on the wrong track. The president thinks the showdown, which he can avoid, is going to help him somehow, and that's why we are where we are today.
But the Republican Party is getting most of the bad rap in the polls when it comes to the shutdown. More people blame the Republicans for this impasse. Don't you agree?
Well, I see this. I'm actually, preferably it would be great to avoid the shutdown, but I do think that one of the things that happens out of this situation, I think, is some focus on things that we would otherwise just blow by, including Obamacare. And speaking of issues that the president's losing on, he's got the worst numbers on Obamacare now that they have had since they started the idea, literally the worst polling numbers. And so I think the focus not only on Obamacare but on federal spending and federal priorities and taxes and spending, I think those are important things to focus on. And so as we're actually in multiple situations here, as you know, we've got the spending issue in front of us. And then of course the debt limit increase. And I suspect from what I'm seeing here, what I'm hearing from friends in Washington is that those two issues are going to get rolled together here.
Talk a little bit more about that, meaning that we're going to stay shut down until the debt ceiling talks and deadlines, and then we'll come to some sort of resolution?
Well, it seems that way anyway. It sounds like where that's kind of heading. The president has, the Republicans offered three different initiatives to immediately fund the federal government, minus the Obamacare piece in the last, since last Thursday, I guess it would be. So they've sent three resolutions over to the Senate to allow that to happen. Those were all rejected out of hand by the Senate and by the White House. And they also took a vote, I think it was late Monday night, to create a conference committee so the two parties and the president could come together and negotiate this out. It is unprecedented that a sitting president would not negotiate on an issue this big. But I think that's part of the public discussion here. Why won't the president negotiate on this issue? And if Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, who were, and apparently the president's been studying a lot of Ronald Reagan books lately, you should probably study them a little more, because Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill got the deals on spending, on taxes, on the 30% tax cut, on any number of other issues. But this president, as he has, on spending, on Obamacare when it originally passed, on the stimulus when it originally passed, on any number of bills, simply refuses to negotiate. And as long as that's his position, it's going to be hard to make progress.
Yeah. But Brian, the president says that, you know, he can negotiate over some of these issues that Republicans have, but give him a clean funding bill to restart the government. Don't tie a law that passed 2 years ago and was upheld by the Supreme Court to the operation of the government.
Well, the problem is with that is Obamacare in and of itself, and I should say really probably more accurately, health care in this country is 20% of the economy, and some would argue 23-24% of the economy, and it has a huge, huge impact on everybody listening to us this morning and the country as a whole. So to say we will leave this huge, huge part of the nation's budget, which the cost of which was underestimated by $1 trillion, a trillion with a T, to just say that, oh, you know, let's leave that off on the side and come to agreement on everything else, that's pretty tough to do. I mean, that's not keeping a park open or keeping some small federal program in Alaska open. That's about 20% of the economy. So I don't think it's responsible to leave that off on the side, and yet the president, again, refuses to negotiate on what I suppose you could argue is the biggest part of the budget.
Yeah, but again, defend a little bit this move by Republicans to try to defund or delay the Affordable Care Act, which did pass, was signed, was upheld by the Supreme Court. Why should a lot of people think Republicans are just being sore losers?
Well, what's interesting about that is, and I, frankly, and I said it publicly 3 months ago, I was not in favor of the defunding, and still have not been. My position has always been is that let's delay. I mean, the president has now, I mean, just for perspective here, the president, who was convinced this was such a great idea, was willing to lose 66 Democrat seats in the House and almost the U.S. Senate over that issue, to lose the U.S. Senate for his party, has delayed over 20 different pieces of Obamacare already, including the employer mandate. And speaking of polls, every poll in the country shows that the people do not want Obamacare, and most of them show that they would prefer to have it delayed. So if the president wants to rely on polling, why doesn't he rely on polling on delaying Obamacare? He's certainly willing to delay other pieces of it. Why wouldn't he negotiate and be willing to delay the individual mandate, which the people clearly want to have happen?
The Democrats will say that these polls show public opinion against the overall, are you in favor of Obamacare? But when asked separately the different provisions of the Affordable Care Act, the American public is all for them. So there's a misunderstanding as to what exactly the health care law is all about.
Well, they do say that, but when I hear them say that, I have to laugh a little bit. They've had four and a half years to sell this to the American public. Remember, the president went to members of his own party when they were trying to pass it originally. I should say he went to members of his own party and said, "Look, pass this. Stick with me. Remember, I won the election," he was telling them. And so pass this. It'll be popular after it passes. Well, it never got popular. And they've had 4 years, or four and a half, I suppose you could say, to sell this thing. And you know what? The American public not only isn't buying, they aren't buying by a huge majority. So they've had the opportunity to sell this to the American public. The president's got people out going door to door. They're spending tens of millions of dollars on television and radio and doing all of that, and yet the numbers are as bad as they are. Well, you know what? To any president, I don't care if it's a Democrat or Republican, you see that and there ought to be an effect on policy. But with this president, because he never likes to negotiate, he likes to get it his way, and there's numerous examples of that, he's not winning on that issue. I mean, he was willing to sacrifice the House of Representatives to get it done. He may sacrifice the U.S. Senate as well.
Are Republicans sacrificing some members by doing this?
Well, I think, you know, we see the polling. I was just looking at some air a few minutes ago. And, of course, folks don't want to shut down. And but they also do want delay. They do, you know, speaking of pieces of polling, they do want federal spending under control. They do want, you know, sometimes they want things that appear to conflict on the surface. So I think there'll be a pretty open discussion here in the next couple months. I mean, we're obviously going to see a pretty open discussion. But frankly, that's one that I welcome because I think the transparency of talking about Obamacare and talking about federal spending, those are issues that work to the Republicans, not to the White House, at least right now.
We will be talking to John Nichols of the Capital Times and the Nation magazine coming up after 7:30. And I know one of the points that he's going to make based on a column he wrote is that this is happening just because moderate Republicans are afraid of being primaried, that the right wing of the Republican Party has taken over. What's your response to that?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think the reason this is happening, really, because there's different, you know, we've been at different points here during this whole fight. I think the reason this is happening is obviously Obamacare is a big part of it. And here the president is willing to sacrifice everything else in the federal budget to save a program which started 48 hours ago. In fact, 48 hours ago, almost exactly at this time. So the president's willing to close parks, do all these things, all these optics that we're seeing, keep veterans from going to the World War II memorial. He's willing to do all of that just to try to not have to negotiate on that part of his program. So the truth of the matter is all of those moderate Republicans who also voted against Obamacare, they also voted against spending increases, they also voted against debt increases in the past. I don't get that sense. I mean, I might be wrong a couple weeks from now, but I don't think so right now. I think people are pretty clear on where they're going in Washington.
Brian Schimming is with us. He is vice chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party, a partner at Midwest Strategy, talking with us about the shutdown showdown and welcoming your reactions and your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with Brian Schimming, vice chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party, about the partial shutdown of the federal government stretching into another day. And with no progress reported at a meeting last night between the president and congressional leaders, we're welcoming your reactions to what's going on, your questions for Brian. Our first caller is Steve in Madison. Hello, Steve.
Good morning. I just, first of all, wanted to make a comment that considering that the thousands of people who tried to sign up for Obamacare yesterday, so many that, you know, the system crashed, certainly indicates to me that people want this. And it seems like the Republicans have been dragging their feet on this and wanting to stop it in any way that they can, all provisions of it. And so my original question was, you know, why don't the Republicans want people to have health care? Why do they want to have insurance companies able to end your coverage because you're sick?
Yeah, all right. Brian, what about that?
Well, first of all, that's plainly not true. Republicans want people to have health care. And if you think it's just the Republicans, since a 17-point majority of the country right now oppose Obamacare, and speaking of yesterday, now I've not tried to do this myself, but kind of anecdotally, I've talked to three people out of six who tried to go on to sign up for the great vaunted Obamacare and it was crashing for them too. It wasn't that they were going on because they had to. It was going on because it was the new system. I mean, I'm not finding many people who are desperate to have Obamacare in place, but they are interested in having health care answers in place. This clearly is not it, and the polling shows that the country doesn't understand that the country does understand it, but the president doesn't. If he'd negotiate on this issue, he'd probably be in a better position to get some of his long-term goals. He doesn't want to negotiate. And by the way, that's a habit with this president. There's any number of issues where he refused to come to the table, from the original stimulus to Obamacare to debt limits. And so at some point, the president's got to remember, presidents have to negotiate too.
Yeah, so why should he negotiate, though, on a law that's already passed, that's already on the books, that's already partially implemented?
Well, the truth of the matter is presidents through the whole country's history have had to negotiate on laws that were already on the books. I mean, that's nothing particularly new. I think it's particularly important in Obamacare's case, to the extent that is part of the negotiation, for two reasons. Number one, the rollout has been horrible. I mean, we've heard dozens and dozens of stories where people were unable to go online. This was the program that they told us was going to be ready to go. So number one is it wasn't ready to roll out. It's why he delayed the employer mandate, because that wasn't ready to roll out. And he ought to do the same with the individual mandate. He ought to listen to the people and do the same with the individual mandate. But secondly, because of that budget issue, this isn't fixing some road somewhere or closing some park or something. This is one out of $5, maybe more than that, out of every person's pocket. It's pretty big. And I think, I mean, the president has shown himself that he's had to delay 20 different parts of Obamacare. And frankly, he just went off and did it instead of going back to Congress to get the law changed. He ought to be thinking about this one.
Tim in Maguanago is with us. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Joe. Usually you're pretty nonpartisan. I'm not that your light isn't shining real good on that today.
Hey, Tim, you're supposed to ask devil advocate's questions,
yeah,
so go
okay,
ahead.
Okay. The question is, this has always been going on, and there's nothing new here. I mean, the media is making it sound like having a government shutdown. No, that's like the rest of us had to deal with the economy in the last couple of years. Negotiating and government friction is part of the fabric of the United States. It's nothing new. And we maybe don't like it, but that's the way government works. If you don't like it, well, then, you know, most of us don't pay attention anyway as well as they should. But this is nothing new. The media is making it sound like this is, oh, such a new, you know, new thing. No, it isn't. This is the way government works. And you can guess whether it was Democrat or Republican is right. You have to negotiate at some point, and there hasn't been a real good record of this on the part of the president at this time. And, you know, the fact on the way this whole bill was passed, was a bit disingenuous too. So this is the way things go, and we need to accept that as, you know, that's the way government works.
Yeah, this is the way government works, Brian?
Well, I was going to say the way this was passed originally, Harry Reid, who yesterday in the media, Harry Reid said that Senate Democrats wouldn't fund programs for kids with cancer until the entire government's funding. He complained it today. He compared it to an Air Force base in Nevada or something, and of course got himself in trouble. He was taking trouble yesterday. Harry Reid is the last person to go out and talk about the legislative process. For folks who remember when Obamacare passed, the Cornhusker kickback, the Louisiana Purchase, all the rule bending to get Obamacare passed, so Harry Reid doesn't have much credibility with me right now. But the truth of the matter is, even the president has said that presidents don't get 100% of what they want. I mean, he's been quoted repeatedly saying that, and yet he says that and won't follow the rule himself. Look, do I think they're going to get Obamacare defunded tomorrow? No, I don't think so, and I've said so publicly. But I do think a delay is pretty legitimate, looking at what we've seen in the last 48 hours. And the truth of the matter is, when you scrape all these kind of, I don't know, process issues or whatever you want to call them away, the people don't want it. And the numbers show that overwhelmingly.
Wayne in Hartford. Hello, Wayne. We're almost out of time. If you can be brief, please.
Sure I can, Joy. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I've heard time and time again about the Republicans talking about the poll results on this whole thing. I would like to see the poll results of a poll taken of only people who are uninsurable right now and what they think of Obamacare.
Yeah, do we know about that, Brian?
Well, I don't think we know about that, but I'll tell you what, there'd be a lot better poll results, not only with them, but with everybody, if we could show we could provide health care options for people without going into a system that will provide worse health care at a lot more extensive costs to everybody in America. That's what we're heading into now. The fact that the president was willing to lowball Obamacare's costs by over $1 trillion tells me that people, when people are informed about, when people catch up to this whole thing, they come down against it. And I think that's important for all Americans. So we can do something about health care.
Brian, I'm sorry, we have less than 30 seconds to go. What's going to happen? What do you see happening?
Well, it seems as though, here anyway, Joy, is that this may get rolled into the debt ceiling fight, which, of course, is close at hand here in the next 10, 14 days. So my bet is that's where it seems to be heading anyway.
And are we going to default?
I don't think we're going to default. I do think I've spent a lot of time in D.C. I do think they'll get to a deal at some point. I don't think we'll be heading for a default.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Brian Schimming, Vice Chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party. We'll talk to John Nichols after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Thursday, October the 3rd. We just heard from Brian Schimming, the vice chair of the Wisconsin Republican Party, to get his take on the federal government partial shutdown and what it's going to take to resolve this. And now we will talk with John Nichols. He is the associate editor of the Capital Times and Washington correspondent at The Nation magazine. And we'll welcome your questions and your reactions too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are entering day three of the federal government shutdown. President Obama met with Republican and Democratic leaders in Congress last night, but to no avail. What do you want to see happen? Who do you think is being reasonable or unreasonable in this dispute? We welcome your input. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Joy. It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you with us. Well, Brian says this is all because the president refuses to negotiate. So why doesn't the president negotiate?
Well, Brian's a Republican, and so he has to say that. I think that the president has a challenging situation. He is being told by a minority of the minority party in our current government that he has to bend to their will. I think that he's very, very resistant to that for a couple of reasons. First off, the Affordable Care Act, which seems to be at the core of this fight, is established law. It's the law of the United States. And to have kind of a constant negotiation on it during implementation, once you've set that tone, and once you've started that process, it's a difficult question as to where it ends. So that's step one. Step two, there's a political factor for Obama in this, and that is that his own party, the Democrats, get quite angry with him because of his compromises. The argument that Barack Obama has given away far too much. This anger goes back particularly to late 2010 budget fights, the question of extending the Bush tax cuts, things of that nature. There are an awfully lot of Democrats in Congress who really do believe the president has been incredibly deferent to Republicans, and so they push him in that way. And then there's a third factor here, and this is the complexity, and that is that this has nothing to do with the president at the end of the day. What this all has to do with is an internal challenge within the Republican Party, and it's well stated by leading Republicans, people like Peter King from New York, who say that there are 30 to 40 very, very conservative, arguably some would describe them as Tea Party Republicans, in the Republican caucus. So you've got about 170, 180 Republicans who could actually, you know, at least consider dealing with the Democrats on this, doing it perhaps a clean resolution and moving forward at least to some extent. But you have a small group of folks who absolutely object to going forward. And you'd say, well, why don't you just isolate them? Why not have the majority of Republicans in the House vote with the Democrats, say, you know, get us out of this mess and move us forward? That's what would have happened in 1995. But the challenge today is that because we gerrymandered our congressional districts to such an extent, the reasonable Republicans know that the threat to them is not a November election. The threat to them is a primary. And those 30 to 40 very conservative Republicans are part of a movement that is quite strong and has a lot of financial backing and has the ability to threaten the rest of the Republicans with primary challenges. And so you end up really with something where if the president was to negotiate, if he, you know, tries to cut a deal with John Boehner, there's very little guarantee that John Boehner can deliver his troops to do that deal. So it's not that the president isn't negotiating. It's not that the president and Boehner aren't inclined to negotiate. It is that neither of them can quite figure out how to isolate the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party and move forward.
And some of the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party were elected in part because of their opposition to Obamacare, to the Affordable Care Act, and they vowed that they were going to repeal this. So they really have their heels dug in.
They do, and they have a right to that opinion. Let us, we would be foolish if we suggested that, you know, this was just for them some sort of political gambit. There are a number of people on the right in Congress who genuinely believe that this is a, you know, kind of a tipping point for America, that if the Affordable Care Act becomes fully implemented, Americans will like it a lot. It will be a very, very popular program, like Social Security, like Medicare, like Medicaid, like Head Start, like so many other programs, like Americans with Disabilities Act. And at the end of the day, when you start to implement these programs, they become a reality. People embrace them, they like them, they fund them. For very, very conservative Republicans who don't like a lot of government, the tremendous fear is that if this is fully implemented, they really have very little chance in the future to shape the country that they would want, which would be a much more free market, much more sort of wide open country with much less government. And so in that context, you can't get so angry with them or their stance. But what people should be concerned about is those supposedly reasonable Republicans, and let's name them, let's be very blunt about it, say a Tom Petri from up in northeastern Wisconsin, or a Paul Ryan from down in southeastern Wisconsin, folks who really have long histories of working across partisan lines, finding places of agreement, even though they are, you know, quite conservative, especially Ryan. Those members of Congress have not stepped up. The supposedly reasonable Republicans have not stepped up and been willing to take the risk of moving forward. And the reason they don't take that risk, I would argue, maybe not in the case of a Ryan per se, but they don't take that risk because they genuinely fear the internal structures of their party more than they fear the popular opinion of the people of the United States.
And they don't want to be primaried.
Well, and that's it. Getting primaried. And I want to emphasize to you, people will think that this is a unique contemporary experience. It's not. There was a time in the Democratic Party, not that long ago, where Democrats feared being primaried. It was a very complicated situation. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, Democratic members of Congress who supported Lyndon Johnson's war in Vietnam began to face frequent and often very difficult primary challenges. And so you had this unique situation where both under Johnson, the early years of Nixon, you had a president who was pursuing a war policy, and that president actually had a majority in Congress to go forward with it. And yet within one party, in that case primarily within the Democratic Party, you had a anti-war wing that was strong enough to pose a real threat to sitting Democratic members of Congress. And it had an influence on the process. This happens at certain times in history. What's worse now, and I happen to be not a big fan of Vietnam War, so that one didn't seem so bad to me. But what's more complex now is gerrymandering, the creation of districts that favor one party or another is on steroids. We don't gerrymander districts the way we used to. And let me give you an example of how extreme it is today. In 1995, when Newt Gingrich led the Congress into a shutdown moment challenging Bill Clinton, Newt Gingrich had about the same number of Republican members, 236, as John Boehner has now, 232. But in Newt Gingrich's caucus, 79 members, a good third, almost a third of his, roughly a third, of his members, came from districts that had voted for Bill Clinton for president in 1992. And so those are Republicans in what could fairly be described as a swing district. They had to worry not just about their primaries, but about November. Today, in John Boehner's caucus, he has only 17 members who represent districts that voted for Barack Obama for president. So you see, in John Boehner's caucus, the fear is not a November election. It's a primary.
We are talking with John Nichols. He is the associate editor at the Capital Times. He is Washington correspondent at The Nation magazine, and we are talking with him about the impasse over a delay now of the Affordable Care Act and the government shutdown. The federal government is entering its third day of shutdown, and we're going to talk some about what's next and where is this headed. Is there a solution in sight? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 8 on this Thursday, October 3rd. We are talking with John Nichols to get his take on the government shutdown showdown. And we have full lines, John, but I do want to ask you where you see this going. I mean, this meeting last night, no progress. The news report saying, no end in sight. Brian Schimming did say in our last half hour he sees this dispute being wrapped up in the debate over the raising the debt ceiling. What do you see happening?
Well, Brian is a very wise person who knows politics very well. And I tend to share his vision that it could go into the debt ceiling debate. But you understand that if this does go into the debt ceiling debate, you're talking about going on for weeks, because that's mid-October that you hit your deadline there. You're also talking about a debate that then begins to take in the full faith and credit of the United States, all sorts of deep, deep fiscal and financial issues. And this is the problem, Joy, and it's the one that probably concerns me the most. For all of the talk we have about, potentially this deadline or that deadline or the resolution, the fact of the matter is that we've entered a stage where we go from crisis to crisis. We resolve our differences not in a moment of concern or open debate, but when there is literally no alternative, when you face the prospect of crashing U.S. markets and potentially the global economy. And there's nothing healthy about that. And there's also something else. When you get into that pattern, the likelihood that you get out of it is very, very rare. The reality is that you start moving from crisis to crisis to crisis to crisis to crisis. And I would argue this is a structural reality defined by a number of factors. The gerrymandering we just talked about, big money, huge special interests that play hard in our politics, a winner-take-all politics that leaves very, very little options for a middle, for the traditional bipartisanship of places to compromise. These are structural realities that you can't argue with, and they create the prospect that we're in this mess for a very, very long time, even if we dodge an occasional meltdown. I've been traveling around the country in the Kennedy School at this point, and both in public settings in small towns, cities, as well as in academic settings, what I hear again and again and again is that when people really think this thing to the logical conclusion, the only resolution they really see is a significant electoral shift one direction or another, which might allow for some address of those structural, political problems, rather than a sense that somehow, lightness and joy will break out in Washington and everybody will start working together.
Yeah, so do you see that there would be that kind of electoral shift? Are people going to be really mad at the Republican Party over this impasse, or the Democrats, or are we going to see it because of this?
Look, 2000, one of the realities of our politics today is that our elections tend to be low turnout elections in the off year. Most people vote in the presidential year, a lot of them drop off. For the Republican Party, that means that the likelihood of punishment for this becomes less. Remember, Newt Gingrich did his shutdown of the government on the eve of a presidential election. Presidential election year's high turnout. So punishment of the Republican Party for this is not as likely as it might have been in 1995. I think there are some Republicans, frankly, who are betting on that they can get through this thing. The real question will be, does America get angry enough, furious enough, to step into the void and start to move things? But I have to tell you, Joy, that's very, very hard, because when you have gerrymandered districts so extremely as we have, and this is a pattern across the country, this is subject to a lot of the research we did for our book, when you've gotten to that point, it is extremely tough to beat incumbents, and harder than it has ever been before. And so the notion, we use a lot of our old political theories to tell us what will happen. We have to look at the landscape as it exists today. And I have to tell you, it would take an immense amount of anger, an immense amount of popular energy to make that political shift. So we do have, and I'm an optimist, right? I don't usually say this, but we do face the prospect that we could be in a circumstance like this until 2016, 2017, an ongoing crisis-to-crisis governance.
Let's go to Jeff in Stevens Point, who is our first caller in this segment. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, Joy. I just have a point about, or a question about, the Affordable Care Act itself. If the people that are currently not insured, possibly because of the inability to pay premium, now they will be asked to pay premium with an incredibly large deductible, like a $5,000 deductible. If they can't afford the premium now, how are they going to afford it then, and how are they going to afford the $5,000 deductible?
Well, I'm not sure John's the health care expert, but they get a subsidy. I know that's part of it. But, John, what do you have to say to that?
Look, the interesting reality of the Affordable Care Act is, and sort of the side story of the moment, it turns out that the biggest objection to the Affordable Care Act from the American people appears to be that they can't get it quick enough. Phone lines are jammed. People, as soon as, even with all of this crisis, as soon as its potential availability arrived on October 1st, there was this overwhelming demand to get to it. And so the reality of the debate we're in is not about aspects of or elements of the Affordable Care Act. The reality is the people appear to really want it, and it has the potential to be exceptionally popular and to work. It will have huge glitches. Everything does. Social Security didn't come in clean or easy. Medicare and Medicaid had their challenges at the beginning. That is always the case. But I think that there's a high likelihood that the Affordable Care Act eventually becomes a very, very popular part of the American landscape. This is not about the Affordable Care Act. This is a political fight that's going on right now. And it's going on between folks who, frankly, don't want to see an expansion of government. And that's a legitimate stance in our politics, versus folks who see a governmental intervention, in this case in the area of healthcare, as essential to get something closer to universal coverage. That's a very old debate, but it's not about the specifics of deductibles or, you know, any one aspect of mandates or something like that. Because all of those things, if they are problematic, if they are burdensome, can be addressed in a functional legislative process. You move things, you change things, you fund things, you defund. But we don't have that right now. We're not talking about a functional legislative process. What we're talking about is a crisis-to-crisis governance that some folks hope will create such a crisis that they will be able to advance an unpopular position, which would be to shut down the Affordable Care Act.
Well, why don't Democrats cave and delay the individual mandate for a year, like the latest proposal from the Republicans would have it, and just and that's it. Just say that's it. Okay, we'll delay it for a year and let's get on with business.
Sure, I understand. And you know, it seems very reasonable and very logical. But then, remember what I suggested just in answer to your last question. If we are in a crisis-to-crisis mode, and in this crisis, the administration caves and gives away a year of existing law, says, well, you know, this is what's supposed to happen, but we're not going to do that for a year. And then we arrive at another crisis. Let's say we did that today. And so they got through the continuing resolution. A couple weeks from now, we're at the debt ceiling. What is the demand then? And then at another continuing resolution, what is the demand then? If you look at the structures of our politics today, if you look at the reality of who's there, why they're there, who they're backed up by financially and politically, you end up in a situation where I would suggest if President Obama gave in, if the Democrats gave in to that demand, they would face another, bolder demand 2 weeks, 4 weeks from now. And so you end up in a situation where I think you have to make that long-term calculus, and my sense is that's why this president, who is frankly profoundly oriented toward compromise, there are very few presidents in history who have been more inclined toward bargaining and compromise. You saw that with the stimulus. You saw that with the Affordable Care Act. You've seen that again and again on extension of Bush tax cuts, all these things. This is a president who likes to work with Congress and to compromise with it. I think the reason he's holding a stronger line at this point is because of a genuine fear that this is no end of things, but it would actually be a beginning.
Yeah. Mark in Appleton, again, almost out of time. Can you be brief, please?
I'll try to, yeah. It's just very ironic that in Wisconsin, Republicans are complaining about what's going on. We're continually told about the recalls, that elections have consequences. Obama won in 2012. Tammy Baldwin won in 2012. The Affordable Care Act was passed. Republicans have been sending misleading and lying things about it. I heard last night somebody say it was passed during lame duck session. That's blatantly false. It was in March. So there's just this constant thing. But I think if Obama caves, it will be really bad for our democracy. The idea that you negotiate with hostage takers is a really bad policy.
We have just a minute to go, John. How do you see this thing ending, getting solved?
I don't go with the line. I respect our caller there, but this is not so much hostage takers. It may fit in some people's minds an image of that. What we're really talking about here is a fully dysfunctional legislative process. If it is fully dysfunctional, made so by, and let's always understand the dynamics that make it so, made so by gerrymandering, by immense amounts of special interest money moved into particular areas of our politics, by a media that tends to cover our politics in very, very dysfunctional ways for the most part, very much personalities versus, you know, deep structure. The answer to your question is, this doesn't end until we either have a wave election that moves it toward one party or another, or until we start to get very, very serious about addressing issues like gerrymandering.
Well, we'll have to end our discussion now. Thanks, John Nichols, for being with us. This is the Ideas Network.